when and where would you like to go back to in our time machine?
Well, I'd like to go back to the early months of 1775, and I think I'd like to go back to London to be present when the British Parliament debated various proposals that were put forward to try and reconcile Britain and its American colonies, which were on the point of a serious crisis. I think many people in the early months of 1775 recognised that unless there was some reconciliation, bloodshed was not far away. And it would be absolutely fascinating to have had the opportunity to listen to some of the speeches that were made, putting forward proposals to try and head off this imminent conflict.
What kind of ideas were they putting forward?
Well, there were three principal proposals that came forward, one of which was actually adopted by Parliament, and it was put forward by the First Minister, what we would now call the Prime Minister, Lord North. And Lord North effectively offered the Americans suspension of Parliament's right to tax the American colonies. Now, taxation of the American colonies had been the cause of the dispute, which had been going on and off, since the end of the Seven Years' War in 1763. The most famous incident was the attempt by Parliament to impose a stamp tax on the American colonies in 1765. But for the 10 years thereafter, the issue of whether Parliament had the right to tax the American colonies was hotly debated on both sides of the Atlantic. And in February 1775, Lord North offered the Americans suspension of Parliament's right to tax the colonies if, in return, the colonial assemblies raised the money required for imperial defence and administration themselves. Now, this probably was never going to get very far because the Americans denied that Parliament had the right to tax, and Lord North was not acknowledging that they had no right to tax. Far from it, he was saying they had a right to tax, but they wouldn't exercise it so long as the Americans raised the required money themselves. If the Americans failed to raise it, then Parliament could still tax them. Now, that was approved by a majority in the British Parliament, and it was the British opening position when the conflict started. If there were going to be any negotiations, it would be on the basis of Lord North's proposal to suspend Parliament's taxation of the colonies so long as the Americans found the money themselves. Now, the other two proposals both failed, and they failed because they were put forward by the parliamentary opposition, two different wings of the parliamentary opposition, which were, of course, in a minority and therefore had very little chance of their proposals being approved. Lord Chatham, who had been William Pitt, the great war leader in the Seven Years' War, in the middle of the 18th century, put forward a proposal in March 1775, which would have involved Parliament giving to an all-American legislature, a bit like the Continental Congress that had been formed in America to coordinate resistance to the British. Chatham was willing to give to an all-American legislature the right to raise taxes in America. But in return, he wanted that all-American legislature to guarantee a sum of money to be paid to the British Exchequer, and he also wanted the Americans to recognise Parliament's right to legislate for America in all other respects. So there was going to be a kind of divided sovereignty proposal. Parliament wouldn't tax America, but Parliament's right to legislate for America would be acknowledged by the Americans. That scheme had all of Chatham's great reputation behind it, but it didn't win parliamentary support. And it probably would not have satisfied the Americans because they weren't looking for an all-American legislature. They were looking for, quite simply, a retention of the system whereby each of the colonies had local autonomy, their own local legislatures, their own local equivalents of Parliament were able to tax them and legislate for them. The American rebellion was, to a large extent, about the preservation of the local autonomy of each of the colonies. It wasn't the intention to create an all-American legislature. It wasn't the intention to create the United States of America. It was the intention was to preserve the colonies in their existing relationship with Britain. The last scheme, and the one that's the most interesting, was put forward by the Rockingham Party's spokesman in the House of Commons, one of their chief spokesmen, Edmund Burke. And Edmund Burke put forward a proposal, again in March 1775, that I think, had it received parliamentary backing, might well have satisfied American opinion. In a nutshell, Burke proposed that there was a return to the status quo of 1763, before Parliament had attempted to tax the American colonies. He wanted Parliament to abstain from taxing the American colonies. He argued that it was impossible to change the Americans. The Americans were very committed to their own rights and their own liberties. They were numerous. They were unlikely to react to pressure. And you had to work with the Americans as they were rather than try and pretend they were something different. And he effectively wanted to see a repeal of all acts that the Americans were opposed to. And his reconciliation plan was very much one that was based on trying to meet American demands and to keep them within the British Empire that way. Now, it didn't receive the backing of Parliament, unsurprisingly. Opinions were very entrenched by the early months of 1775. It was unlikely to get parliamentary support. But it was a great speech. Everyone who heard it apparently thought it was a great speech, even if they didn't agree with it. And it was a speech that showed a willingness to try and understand the American position that very few British politicians had demonstrated throughout the crisis of the previous decade. I suspect that if Parliament had shown a willingness to embrace what Burke was suggesting, the Americans might well have been willing to come to terms.
By the sound of it, it could have changed the course of world history if it had worked.
Well, what it might have done, very interestingly, it might well have avoided a war. And once that war started, and the shooting war between the American colonies and Britain started in April 1775, if that war had been avoided, if there hadn't been a shooting war, and if the two sides had continued to try and work out their differences without violence, then it seems highly unlikely that there would have been a declaration of independence and a complete breaking away of the rebel colonies to form the United States. A critical thing to remember is that the Americans, when the war started, were certainly not aiming for independence. If there were people aiming for independence, there were very, very few. Most Americans, I think, believed that using military means to defend themselves against what they perceived as British aggression was not a step to breaking away from Britain. It was part of a process that they hoped would lead to the overthrow of Lord North's government and the King calling in the opposition, the Rockingham opposition, of which, of course, Burke was a prominent member. And it may well be that the Americans hoped, even when they started the fighting part of the conflict, that there would be a change of government. Lord North's government would be dismissed by the King. The King would turn to the Rockingham Party, and in would come Burke's party, which would implement Burke's solution to the problem. In other words, it would seek to negotiate with the Americans and return to the status quo before Parliament tried to tax the colonies, and that the relationship would be repaired. Now, in reality, I suppose once the fighting starts, it's very difficult to see any way back. But it's clear that Burke's proposals pretty well matched what the Americans were looking for. I think they would have been proposals that they could have lived with, and it may have secured their continued relationship with Britain, because the Americans at that stage were still very committed to the British Crown. They continued to claim that they were loyal to the Crown and had no argument with the Crown. Their argument was simply with the claims of the British Parliament to be able to tax the American colonies. So I think Burke's proposals offered a realistic way forward. The only problem was they were unlikely to get support within Parliament at a time when there was very little willingness to bend to the Americans and accommodate their position.
Do you think the British government just completely misunderstood the American position?
I think, interestingly, both sides misunderstood each other's positions. I think there's a great deal of misunderstanding and mutual incomprehension. They speak the same language, literally, of course, English, but they speak the same language in the sense they're both brought up in English constitutional traditions of liberty and representative government, but they were clearly applied in different ways on the different sides of the Atlantic. And the Americans were very attached to their local assemblies, their equivalents of parliament, and they saw the British Parliament very much like their own local assemblies, dealing with local matters and not having any jurisdiction over them more generally. So they saw it as a kind of domestic legislature of Great Britain, not as an imperial legislature able to pass laws and levy taxes in the American colonies. Now, the British, I think, did not understand why the Americans could perceive of their Parliament's claims as a threat to liberty. They found it inconceivable that Parliament could be viewed as somehow threatening to the liberties of the King's subjects anywhere. So there is a kind of mutual incomprehension, I think, that lies at the heart of this crisis and ultimately explains the war.
The two sides almost stumbled into war, really.
Yes, I think so. I think that's right. I think this is where Burke, I think, was very unusual in seeking to understand the other side's point of view rather than simply asserting the rights of Parliament, or, in the American case, asserting that Parliament didn't have any right. He was trying to actually deal with the situation as it was rather than pursue to their uttermost abstract claims of rights. I think he was extremely unusual in seeking to understand the perspective of the other side. And his speech, while it says some things about the colonies that are over simple and from the point of view of a modern historian actually downright wrong, he does seek to understand why the Americans are so attached to liberty. And he talks about the Protestant nonconformist tradition that's so strong in the North. He talks about Americans as very committed to understanding rights and laws. And he also talks about how in the South, the very fact that many white Southerners own slaves, African slaves, makes them all the more aware of what liberty involves. So he tries to understand the Americans. He's not necessarily approving of them. He's not necessarily saying that they're right, but he's saying if you don't try and understand where they're coming from, why they think like this, you're never really going to be able to reconcile them to the continuing connection.
What was Burke's position during the war?
Burke's position was actually very difficult because Burke wasn't in favour of American independence. His whole purpose was to prevent American independence by conciliating the Americans and keeping them within the British Empire. So he and the Rockingham Knight Party were very despairing, I think, when the war started, and were very dejected when the Americans declared themselves independent. But gradually they recognised that there was nothing that you could do about that. You had to accept that the Americans had made that choice. And Burke, very interestingly, was still convinced that although the Americans had formally declared themselves independent, they were still part of the extended British nation. As late as 1779, 3 years after the Americans declared themselves independent, he effectively said, well, how the Americans choose to organise themselves, whether under our monarchy or as separate republics, doesn't really matter. They're still Englishmen. So Burke never really entirely accepted that the political parting of the ways had really brought about a complete breach in this transatlantic British nation. But I think to many Britons, the Americans had gone their own separate way. And when they allied with Britain's almost hereditary enemy, France, that to many Britons finished any idea of a transatlantic British nation. The Americans had clearly sided with the great enemy of Britain, France, and that put them beyond the pale.
That was the final straw for them.
I think so. I think the final straw in many ways is the Franco-American alliance of 1778, which puts the Americans, in the view of most Britons, beyond the family. It's no longer a kind of struggle against ungrateful and recalcitrant children who need to be coerced back into the family fold. It's now a war against a foreign nation.